Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, happy days are here again, as Barbara Streisand sang on Wednesday, or as we played the old song of Barbara Streisand on Wednesday. Welcome back, or welcome to our show. Tom Hartman here with you. And it is Friday, so of course it is Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders with us for the first hour of our program. The second and third hour, Anything Goes Friday, we'll be taking your calls. And Bernie will be taking your calls as well after our first break. Our toll-free number nationwide, 866-303-2270. Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. He is the independent member of the United States Senate from the great state of Vermont, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives before he moved to the Senate. And I think of him as America's senator. Our national town hall meeting begins now. Welcome, Bernie.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Always great to have you here. You know, your name has been being tossed around almost like an epithet. You know, Barack Obama is even more liberal than that socialist, Bernie Sanders. First of all, I didn't know that, you know, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's funny. I became part of the Republican Party's talking points from McCain, from Senator Voinovich, from Haley Barbour. I just, it went around the country. So what they did is they started off with a stupid list of vote analysis done by the National Journal. And the National Journal, 4 years ago, amazingly enough, had John Kerry as the most liberal member.
What an odd coincidence.
Oh, what a coincidence. This year it was Barack Obama. So let me just say this. For those of you who are excited about the fact that Obama is the most liberal member of the Senate, I'm going to have to disappoint you. It's just not the fact. And those of you who are frightened about that prospect, well, you got some good news. That's not the fact either. So this was just a talking point on the part of the Republicans after calling him a terrorist and an advocate of teaching sex to 3-year-olds or whatever it was. They threw this one in as well. But having said that, the issue, interestingly enough, for a variety of reasons, of socialism rose during this campaign. I think it's not a bad idea that we start having an honest discussion in this country, a real conversation of what democratic socialism is about. And I think, Tom, as I mentioned on the show before, a number of months ago, we had the ambassador of Finland coming to Burlington, Vermont. We had standing room only. I mean, 400 people were out. And I think what people were curious about is how in a very democratic society, very high voter turnout, freedom of the press, all of that stuff, of course, how do they manage to provide health care, quality health care to all of their people? How do they manage to provide free health care, free college education for all of their people? How do they have excellent quality child care for all of their people? How do their workers manage to get 30 days a year off paid vacation? How are their public schools generally regarded to be the best in the world? That's Finland. You know, you got Sweden, Denmark, Norway, all these other countries have, you know, varying degrees of achievement in these areas. Western Europe has done a good job in many of these areas. So I think it is something that we should not run away from. What does democratic socialism mean? And I think from my perspective, what it means is making sure that all of our people have at least a minimal standard of living. Of course, all people should have healthcare as a right. Of course, every American should be able to go to college regardless of their income. Of course, we want to make sure that all of our kids get off on a good start in life and have good quality child care. Of course, we don't want to see workers working, in some cases, 52 weeks a year, incredibly long hours without any vacation time. So what is all of this raises the issue, what is the proper role of government in our society? Under Bush, of course, the role of government is simply to make war and to give tax breaks to billionaires. In most countries, government plays a much stronger role in trying to improve the lives of middle-income and working families, and they have had good success. So I think having that conversation of the role of government, what democratic socialism means, is something that might be a very positive step forward for our country.
Yeah, useful and helpful one. My quote for the day from Rear Admiral Gene LaRoc, U.S. Navy retired, nearly 70% of the military budget is to provide men and women to fight in foreign countries in support of allies and friends and for offensive operations in third world countries. Another chunk of the defense budget is the 20% allocated for our offensive nuclear force of bombers, missiles, and submarines, whose job it is to carry nuclear weapons to the Soviet Union. Actual defense of the United States costs about 10% of the military budget and is the least expensive function performed by the Pentagon.
Well, that raises, that's an interesting quote. As I think most of the listeners have read this morning and seen the papers or seen the TV, is unemployment has gone up to 6.5%. We now have over 10 million people who are unemployed. But more importantly, if you look at people who are trying to find full-time jobs and only have part-time jobs, you're looking close to 17 million Americans who are either unemployed or underemployed, not just an astronomically high number. What I will be fighting for, Tom, when the Senate and the House reconvene on November 17th, is a major economic recovery package of at least $300 billion, which starts reinvesting in America, dealing with our crumbling infrastructure, roads, bridges, culverts, water systems, sewer systems, and also investing in sustainable energy and energy efficiency so that we can break our dependency on Mideast oil and foreign oil in general and fossil fuels and move a step forward in lowering greenhouse gas emissions and combating global warming. We have also got to invest in health care immediately, more and more people without any health insurance, and we can do that. And when we do that, by the way, investing in primary health care, community health centers, for example, we save money because if people can gain access to a doctor or a dentist, they don't end up in the emergency room, they don't end up in the hospital. So you save money by making sure that all of our people have access to doctors. We've got to extend unemployment benefits. We have got to make sure that people in this country are not going hungry right now in Vermont, all over this country. We have our emergency shelters filled to capacity. We have working families lining up at emergency food shelves in order to get food because their wages don't cover, they're not adequately covering a food budget. So we got a lot of problems on our hands. And given the economic crisis, now is the time to start reinvesting in America. We can create for every billion dollars of investment about 47,000 new jobs. So we can create millions of good-paying jobs, rebuilding this country and making us the kind of competitive nation we must be in the 21st century.
And we're spending over $2 billion a week in Iraq.
Not to mention, right. And then when people say, and that's where the quote that you just read us becomes relevant, is, well, where are you going to get this money? Well, let's end the war in Iraq, $10 billion a month. Let's start asking our friends who have made out like bandits, the people in the top 1%, the top one-tenth of 1%, who have seen a huge increase in their wealth under Bush, let them start paying their fair share of taxes. So we end the absurdity of billionaires paying an effective tax rate, which is lower than a police officer or a fireman or a nurse.
Well, this raises another interesting question, Brian. David Stockman and Ronald Reagan and the guys in the Reagan administration, because that's where this really started. When Reagan dropped the top marginal tax rate from 74%, where Lyndon Johnson put it, people say Kennedy did it, but it was actually LBJ. When he dropped it from 71 or 74% down to 26 or 28%, that part of their rationale was to literally, they wanted to run up the debt because
right.
They figured if they could get the debt, they called this the starve the beast phenomena, and if they could get the debt high enough, it would prevent any future president from being able to engage in social programs that may, over the short term, require deficit funding before, over the long term, they started producing returns, because basically it's like investing in people, like education, like you were talking
right.
about.
No, that's,
how do we deal with this?
Well, I'll tell you something, and as I've said on this show many times, I am as happy as I can be that Barack Obama was elected president of the United States. We talked about this the other day. Great campaign, huge citizen involvement, tremendously strong positive feelings out there. People are feeling great in my state. 67% of the people voted for Obama, including many of the conservative rural areas of the state. People want change with the lighter that Obama is in. But let's be very clear. Every step of the way that Obama moves forward in a progressive direction, he is going to be opposed by the financial services industry. He's going to be opposed by the pharmaceutical industry, by the insurance companies. He's going to be opposed by the military-industrial complex. So what we have got to do, and there's some indication that Obama is prepared to do this, is continue that mobilization effort, that grassroots activism, where ordinary people are going to stand up to the big money interests and say, hey, we have got to change in a very fundamental way the direction of this country from where Bush took us.
Yeah. In my opinion, step one is to roll back the Reagan tax.
That's right.
But that's, you know, forget the Bush tax cuts. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. He'll be taking your calls next, 866-303-2270, 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, and I'm telling you, that's going to be the next big battle. For more information, go to teamster.org. And welcome back to our show. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls. Bernie, ready to go?
Let's do it.
Okay, Delbert in Missouri, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You two are great American heroes, should be awarded the Medal of Freedom.
Thank you, Delbert.
President-elect Obama is today having a meeting with several economic advisors. It sounds to me like most of those people are free traders. What's the possibility we can get someone in there with the economic philosophy like you, Bernie, and you have?
Well, that is...
That understand the dangers of free trade, the trade deficit, the loss of jobs, the... Ultimately, the loss of our economic security and our way of life.
Well, I am in absolute agreement with the caller. And we are going to, some of us, are going to put as much pressure as we can on the Obama administration to fundamentally rethink our current trade policies. I would mention to some of the listeners something very, very interesting, that at the end of the campaign, the Democratic National Committee were putting ads on all over the country in support of their candidates talking about the loss of jobs as a result of our disastrous trade policy. They understand that the American people are sick and tired of seeing these companies shut down in America, move to China, pay people their 50 cents an hour, and bring that product back into this country tariff-free. They're sick and tired of a huge trade deficit, which is now well over $600 billion a year. So the caller is absolutely right. Now, what Obama has been saying during the campaign, no more tax breaks for companies that are shipping our jobs abroad. Well, I think, frankly, we've got to go further than that. We've got to trade is a good thing. If it is fair trade, if it protects American jobs and not just the CEOs of large corporations. So the caller makes a very good point. A number of us are very cognizant of that, and we're going to do everything that we can to see that this country moves toward a new direction in trade.
And as individuals, we should let our legislators know?
Absolutely. Look, the sentiment out there, if you go to people, and this is not just a left-wing issue or a right-wing Democrat or Republican, there are people from all walks of life who have seen what has happened in this country in terms of the loss of good-paying jobs. You have people in the military who are deeply concerned that we're not producing the type of military products and weaponry systems in our own country. We don't have the capability of doing that anymore. anybody who goes shopping, you know, Christmas time or any time, notes that it's very hard to find products made in the United States of America.
Yeah, we can't make a cruise missile without chips from China. And the front page of today's Financial Times has articles about how both the Obama and the McCain websites were hacked and damaged by hackers from China.
That's right.
This is downright weird.
That's right. Okay. I don't know how you have a strong economy if we're not producing the goods and services that the American people consume. So the caller makes a very good point.
Amen. Frank in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Frank, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator, why don't you introduce some kind of legislation outlawing the privatizing of our elections, the candidates telling lies about other candidates, caging, election fraud, robocalling. The Secretary of State should only be allowed to disseminate election information. And, you know, they're using private, I don't know how they got the right to use private companies to isolate or to discriminate against voters.
Okay, Frank, you raise an important issue. I don't know that I agree with the specifics that you've mentioned. Very hard to tell somebody not to quote unquote lie, because who's going to be the judge of that? I mean, you know, who's going to sit there and say this one is lying and that one is not lying? I think we have to rely on the intelligence of the American people and a strong and free press to help us out on that one. But the broader issue that Frank is raising is election reform. And this is above and beyond campaign finance reform. What do we mean by election reform? You know, frankly, it is insane that in the United States of America, there are people who just on Tuesday waited hours and hours and hours to vote.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do a little bit better than that. When you walk into your grocery store, you don't wait online 3 hours, you know, to buy your groceries.
Yeah.
We are smart enough and effective enough to do that, to have the people be able to walk in or vote by absentee, and do it quickly, efficiently, and most importantly, be 100% certain that the votes that they have cast are accurately counted. That raises another issue, and that is, you know, the whole concern that millions of people have about the fragility of these touchscreen computer voting machines. I am old-fashioned, and I would rather vote by paper and make sure that you have a trail there, everything is maintained. If it takes a little bit longer, that's fine, too. The other thing is even voting hours. It was interesting, because of the huge upsurge in voter turnout in Florida, the Republican governor did the right thing. He extended the hours by which people could vote early. We've got to be thinking about maybe doing a national holiday as Election Day so that people, everybody, can have the time to go out and vote.
Yeah, very well said. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Bernie's website is sanders.senate.gov. He's got a great newsletter over there if you want to sign up for it. Ours, airamerica.com for a free video stream. TomHartmann.com if you want to drop into our live free chat room and our free audio archives. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Call 866-303-2270.
For the rest of us, the Tom Hartmann Radio Program, our Brunch with Bernie Hour, Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov is website, tomhartmann.com for our free live chat room, airamerica.com for our free live video stream and audio stream and archives, all kinds of cool stuff. Bernie, let's see here. James in Bloomfield, New Jersey. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask, of all the reasons McCain could have lost the election, actually did lose the election, do you think one of them was during the debates when he laid out his health care plan? Because as much as people don't like socialized medicine, I don't know why, but they don't, they definitely don't want to lose their employee health benefits. And can I make a comment afterwards if there's time?
James, I agree with you. I think that the American people perceived that as bad as the current healthcare situation is right now, McCain's proposal would have only made it worse and forced, you know, ordinary people to go out and try to buy health insurance have to address the problem of pre-existing conditions. You know, when you are alone without even an employer benefit behind you, taking on a large insurance company, you don't have a whole lot of clout. So I think people perceive that the quality of care they would get would deteriorate, the amount of money they'd have to spend for it would go up. So I think your point is well taken.
Yeah, indeed. Frank in Phoenix, Arizona, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I know Obama has a full plate right now, but I think I have history on my side if I say this, that if he wants to be a one-term president, he can let Bush off the hook. Bush doesn't need to go, as far as I'm concerned, Bush doesn't need to go to prison or anything, but he needs to be found guilty of war crimes. He needs to, they need, you guys need to take away his $500,000 or whatever you guys do for the rest of his life that they pay for being a lousy president and apply the Son of Sam law, even though they're not going to let him write a book, but apply the Son of Sam law so that he can't write a book and make a profit.
Frank, let me disagree with you in this sense. I think if Obama wants to be a one-term president, that's the way you do it. If you look at the economic statistics today, if you look at the healthcare situation today, if you look at the war, people want to move this country in a very different direction. They don't want to spend the next 2 years arguing about the pathetic Bush administration. Now, having said that, I do think that there are some things that should be investigated. How did we get to the war, in Iraq? Was there an intentional effort to deceive the American people about WMDs? The whole issue of civil liberties and so forth. So I think you want to take a look at these things. A, you want to reverse many of Bush's policies. B, you want to make sure that nobody ever does those things again. But I don't think you want to be obsessed with spending the next years dealing with the Bush administration. We have enough work in front of us. Boy, do we have enough in front of us to move this country.
Wouldn't it be a good thing, though, to enforce the subpoenas against Karl Rove, for
Absolutely.
Example?
Absolutely. Yes, of course.
I'm not suggesting
otherwise. There are a lot of questions.
Because Clinton really dropped the ball, you know, on Iran-Contra and things. He just decided not to pursue any of those investigations.
But from a political point of view, I think Frank is exactly wrong. That is not what the American people want. So there's a lot that we should be doing in terms of understanding many of the things that Bush did so that we don't get into those things again, but I don't want to be obsessed by Bush for another 4 years. We had him for 8 years. That's too long already.
Yeah, indeed. Sean in Vancouver, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, I continue to read in the financial press that we mustn't have a witch hunt when it comes to Wall Street, but I would simply ask, what exactly do we call the 30 years in which working class and poor people were destroyed, quite literally, in terms of families, drugs, violence, prisons, and so forth? That looks pretty much like a witch hunt of the working class to me. And I don't want us to wind up like South Africa, where we have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, but then there's no structural change. We must have a clawback of this 30-year class war that's utterly ravaged most of the population of this
country. Well, Sean, you raise very important issues. You know, one of the frustrations that I've had, and it manifests itself in some of the dialogues that I had with Alan Greenspan when I was on the House Financial Services Committee or with the secretaries of Treasury and other Bush officials who testified before the Budget Committee. One of the lies that they kept telling over and over again is, and I'm talking about before the last 6 months, they kept saying to us how great the economy was doing, how robust it was. Tom, you remember all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Economy is growing, unemployment is stable, blah, 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 blah. The reality is, while they were telling us this, Sean is exactly right. What we were seeing is a disintegration of the middle class. Wages went down. Median family income for working families, $2,000 less than what it was under Clinton. 7 million people lost their health insurance. 4 million people lost their pensions. The gap between the very rich and everybody else grew wider. 18% of our kids living in poverty. Elderly people not having the funds to retire with dignity. So Sean's point is quite right. There has been a massive transfer of wealth from the middle class to the top 0.1%. And it is, if this election means anything, is that that is a reality that has got to be dealt with. The future of this country and our kids and our grandchildren depend on rebuilding the middle class. And so I agree with Sean, and that is we've got to focus on that issue almost more than anything else that's out there.
Manuel in Beaverton, Oregon. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, guys. Thank you for all the great work you both have done. It's you're saving this country. I wanted to comment about the Treasury Secretary position. And basically, I'm concerned that they might appoint some more Goldman Sachs alumni or other financial criminals. And I hope that doesn't happen. But what is the possibility of getting somebody like Ravi Batra appointed to that position instead of one of these criminals?
Somebody like whom?
Ravi Batra is an economist who's a regular on our show.
Well, I think you've asked a very good question, similar to a question that was posed earlier. And that question dealt with whether we continue the same types of trade policies that we have right now. You know, I think that Obama is going to need economic advisors at OMB, at Treasury, who are not part of the same old, same old. That is, Robert Rubin, Larry Summers. They're smart people. They're not the worst people in the world by any means. A lot better than what Bush has had. But I think it is part of that corporate elite from Goldman Sachs, from other financial institutions who do not look at the world from the perspective of the struggling middle class, look at it from the vantage point of being worth, in some cases, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, as the current Secretary of the Treasury is, and develop policies on that perspective. So I would agree with the callers, and we are doing our best to see that we get into the administration people from the AFL-CIO, from progressive think tanks, people who share some of our concerns about unfettered free trade, who want to move aggressively to undo the deregulation fiascos that we have seen under Bush, that want to promote the middle class and not just the very wealthy. So the caller raises a very, very important issue, and we'll see what we can do on that.
I'm just looking at the front page of the electronic New York Times here, Bernie, and if you take out the anomaly of right after 2001, after 9/11, you know, the recession that ensued, the relatively short one, unemployment figures right now are as bad as they were under the last Bush presidency, the last 2 years of the last Bush.
So you're back to where you were 14 years ago.
That's right.
That. And, you know, what everybody is saying, you know, and I hope these pundits are wrong, but what the economists are saying is everything being equal, unless we act, unemployment can go as high as 7 or 8%, which is why I think we need a major economic recovery program to rebuild America and create millions of good-paying jobs.
Yeah, amen. And you're proposing one. I just got your email, just got your newsletter in the mail just a few seconds ago.
Right.
Steve in Steubenville, Ohio. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Good. I thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Sanders, to allow me to pick your brain for a moment. If Obama implements laws restricting insurance companies from dropping patients with pre-existing conditions, this is a three-part question. The first part is, do you think it'll start forcing insurance companies out of the business? If so, would we be able to start pushing through H.R. 676 for single-payer insurance for this nation? And thirdly, if we were to push H.R. 676, would that help transfer trillions of dollars of wealth from corporations back into middle America?
Okay.
Yeah, Steve, very bill, isn't it?
Steve, you asked a very important question. Let me just say a few words on health care. We have 47 million Americans without any health insurance. You have even more who are underinsured. And at the end of the day, despite all of that, we pay twice as much per person on healthcare as any other country. And then we got some 56 million Americans, some of whom have insurance, who can't even find a doctor, don't have a regular doctor, can't gain access to healthcare when they need it. And the result of that is that some 20,000 Americans die every single year because they don't get to a doctor when they should. What study after study has shown is that we can, as a nation, provide quality health care to every man, woman, and child through a national health care program without spending any more than the enormous sums of money that we are currently spending. The essential problem with our current health care system is that it is perceived as a business because it is dominated by the insurance companies and the drug companies, whose job is not to provide cost-effective health care, but to make as much money as they possibly can, distorting all of the priorities that we should be establishing in health care.
Very well said. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Our Brunch with Bernie hour, taking your calls from all across the United States or around the world, if you'd like. 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back here on the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Say that Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town, with political connections to spread his wealth around. Born into society, a banker's only child, he had everything a man could want: power, grace, and style. But I work in his factory, and I curse the life I'm living, and I curse my poverty, and I wish that I could be. Oh, I
welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour of the Tom Hartman Program, brought to you by you, our listeners, supporting our show, your local radio station, and our advertisers. Let them know you're listening, please. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie. And taking your calls, 866-303-2270. Our telephone number, Stephen in Hollywood, Florida. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, am I on?
You are on the air, Stephen.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm so happy to hear you all talking about the tax reform issue from a different way. The fact that it's, if you look at the obscene gains of those making $1 million more, if you tease those out, actually there has been little gain for most rich people. They've just been conned into supporting plans that not only devastate the poor and the middle class, but are causing them to pay additional taxes as well. It's ridiculous that we have allowed the Republicans to own this issue for so long.
Well, I'm not sure where you're coming from, but if the point is that we need serious tax reform, we certainly do.
I think Stephen's point is that somebody making merely $1 million a year is getting screwed, too. It's the billionaires who are making out like
billions. Well, I mean, you know, Warren Buffett, who is, I guess, maybe the richest guy in the country right now, he makes the point that his effective tax rate is lower than a secretary's.
Mm.
And what happens is that there are all kinds of loopholes out there in a very complicated tax system, and it's not only for individuals. What you have is the absolute obscenity, which must be dealt with, of companies like Halliburton and others simply and very consciously and overtly moving out of this country in order to avoid paying their fair share of taxes, and yet they want all of the benefits that they can accrue by doing business in the United States of America. I mean, you talk about patriotism. I mean, that you want to shirk your responsibilities, but you want all the advantages. So the issue of dealing with income and wealth inequality, the issue of creating a tax system which is fair to the middle class and working families, the issue of reinvesting in America, creating the kinds of wealth that we need by rebuilding our infrastructure, moving away from fossil fuel, creating the kinds of educational systems that we need. Man, those are the issues that are standing right out there that we have to move aggressively on. The last point that I want to make, Tom, and I've made this before, but it needs repeating. Barack Obama is going to be under tremendous pressure to not go forward in a progressive way. And what our job is to make sure that he understands that if he is prepared to take on the insurance companies or the military industrial complex or the drug companies or the banks or the insurance companies, that the American people will be behind him in that. And if we do that effectively, we can make just fantastic changes in this country and improve the lives of tens of millions of Americans.
How, do we do that by calling his Senate office? I mean, he's not president right now. You can't call the White House.
Well, I mean, just over the next few months and year, let You know, what he did in his campaign, the most extraordinary thing that he did is involve millions of people in the process. And what we have got to make sure of is that that citizen involvement does not disappear,
right,
that it remains strong and steady. So it means letting through emails, through phone calls, letting your own members of Congress, your senators know, hey, don't back away from the middle class. Don't go to the same old, same old. And let's move this country forward.
And people can join organizations like Howard Dean's brother, Jim Dean's Democracy for America.
That's a good one. Move on. I mean, there are many organizations.
Yeah, yeah,
we need
absolutely
to reactivate it. You mentioned a moment ago about the Employee Free Choice Act,
yes,
which will enable millions of Americans who now want to join unions to be able to do so. Think of what that will mean, not only from an economic perspective, from a political perspective as well. So the lesson of this campaign is that the American people want to be involved in the political process. My point is, it's not just on Election Day. You've got to keep that effort going 365 days a year.
Yep. And speaking of the Free Choice Act, David in Grand Rapids, Michigan has a question about that. David, you're on the air.
Thank you, guys. Thank you both for your time on all of this. I'm a Democrat. I vote. I drive truck, and I wish I were a Teamster. Where are we at with the Free Choice Act? Has it cleared the House, the Senate?
Yeah, but here's where we are with it. Last session, it passed the House by a pretty good vote. And we got defeated in the Senate because we couldn't get the 60 votes that we needed. So I think, once again, the struggle will be for the Employee Free Choice Act will be in the Senate. We will continue to have Republican opposition. And apropos of what I was saying a moment ago, we have got to make sure that those Republicans who are going to vote against us hear from working people. And I got to tell you, there may be some conservative Democrats who are thinking twice about this. And they have got to hear from their constituents that workers have the right to engage in collective bargaining. It's a constitutional right, that we can't continue a situation where almost all of the power rests with the employers, who can fire union organizers, fire pro-worker unions, and have a very unfair system in terms of workers trying to organize a union. So there's one area where we're going to need a whole lot of worker involvement in order to pass this legislation.
Yeah. Jerry in Santa Fe, we've got about a half a minute here. Jerry, real quick.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think that the dialogue is skewed by the words that we're using. I mean, we bandy around this word middle class. Almost never during the campaign did we hear candidates talking about working class or poor or working poor. And I think that, you know, in the Depression, three-fourths of
Jerry, I'm sorry, we're out of time.
Jerry makes a good point, but you are hearing more and more discussion, in fact, about the working class.
Yeah, amen. And we need to hear even more.
Yes, we
do. And Senator Bernie Sanders, one of the great champions of it, his website, sanders.senate.gov. Bernie, thanks so much for dropping
good
by.
Good to be with you, Tom. Bye.
Talk to you next week. Anything Goes Friday, coming up next. Your call. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Anything Goes Friday here. Before we get to your calls and Anything Goes, there's a couple Anything Goeses that I wanted to talk about very briefly. First of all, just an FYI, and for those watching the web stream, I am holding this up in my hand. Legacy of Secrecy, the latest book that Lamar Waldron and I wrote. My new book is out. Literally, today. I got my copy yesterday from Amazon. I think they're probably the only ones who have it in stock, although check your local bookstore because the official release date is the 10th of November. But in our last book, Ultimate Sacrifice, we laid out who killed John Kennedy and how. In this book, we lay out who killed Martin Luther King and how, and get into the Bobby Kennedy assassination to some smaller extent. The title is Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination, Robert Kennedy, National Security, the Mafia, and the Assassination of Martin Luther King by Lamar Waldron with Tom Hartman. And it's a beautiful, beautiful book, 850 pages, another doorstop, another brilliant effort by Lamar, and just wanted to tell you that that's out. And we will have Lamar on next week or the week after to be talking about. We'll get into more details on that. Secondly, I wanted to talk about something that is just, you know, very much in the news and nobody's talking about. And that is Mitt Romney and the Mormons and the association between Proposition 8 in California and the tearing down of Sarah Palin. And to the best of my knowledge, nobody seems to be connecting these dots, and they are so obvious to me that either I am a hopeless conspiracy nut, which may well be the case, although it seems like most of the time when I've identified what, you know, people say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory, I turn out to be right. I'm going to tell you about Georgia in just a moment, the country, although we could talk about the state as well, where tens of thousands of people showed up to vote and discovered that they'd been caged. But nonetheless, this whole thing of Sarah Palin and Mitt Romney, I'm going to predict right now that the Republican candidate for president in 2012 is going to be Mitt Romney. This is a guy who has the ambition. He has the money. The Mormon Church, Mitt Romney, of course, is a Mormon and has huge Mormon backing. The Mormon Church is aggressively trying to reinvent itself, or at least many Mormons within the church. I shouldn't speak of the church itself, but many of the highly political Republican Mormons, which is the vast majority of Mormons are Republicans, but of the highly political ones, poured millions of dollars into Proposition 8 in California. Andrew Sullivan blogging yesterday or the day before, 77% of all the money, out-of-state money, for Prop 8, the anti-gay measure in California came from Mormons, not from the church itself. This isn't something where, you know, their tax-exempt status is at risk, but from Mormon activists. And because it was individuals, I mean, we're talking checks, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100,000, very large checks. If Mormons in America can convince the, I was going to say mainstream, I'm reluctant to use that word, but the Jerry Falwell faction, if they can convince the Pat Roberts faction, let's say the powerful, the reigning Christian powers, largely Protestant, largely evangelical, if they can convince them that they are not an anti-church, that they actually are a Christian church, and a reconciliation can come about with them, much as it did between the Catholics and these folks over the last few years, largely around the issue of abortion with the Catholics and the evangelical Protestants. The Mormons are using gay marriage as the issue, these activist Mormons, to bring about this reconciliation. It's going to pave the way for there not to be the opposition to a Mitt Romney candidacy in 2012 like there was in 2008. Mitt Romney was actively behind the scenes opposed by the fundy branch, the right-wing conservative Christian fundamentalist branch of the Republican Party. And it's one of the things, you know, without that opposition, frankly, if they had openly embraced him rather than embracing a variety of others, actually, throughout the campaign, but in particular, Mr. Huckabee, if they had embraced him, he probably would have been the nominee, and he would have given Barack Obama a run for his money. And I am telling you, his goal is to be the nominee in 2012. And to give Barack Obama a run for his money. And in order to do that, he has to take down Sarah Palin first. Everybody's wondering, where are these leaks coming from in the Republican Party? And why would the Republican Party do the circular firing squad thing and start shooting at their own vice presidential nominee? The answer is very, very simple. After the Romney candidacy went down, John McCain hired and brought into his staff, and particularly once he became the party's nominee, many of these people were in permanent positions inside the Republican Party, a number of Romney loyalists. And I'm telling you, the Romney loyalists, in all probability, are the ones who are behind or encouraging or actually even perpetrating these very, very destructive leaks against Sarah Palin. This is not, in my opinion, John McCain sour grapes. Frankly, I think McCain is bigger than that. And I don't think that it's people in his campaign trying to prove how good they were. I think this is Mitt Romney trying to clear the field for 2012. And the whole Prop 8 thing in California was part of the Mormon activist Republican supporters of Mitt Romney trying to prove to the evangelical Protestants that they have political muscle. Keep in mind, Prop 8 in California was the second most expensive campaign in the United States behind the presidency, if the numbers that I've been reading are right. I mean, I may be, you know, subject to correction, but I've seen this from several different sources now. I believe it to be true. And so, in my opinion, this is all about, this is not about, you know, Sarah Palin and John McCain. It's not about Sarah Palin and the presidency. She may be successful in picking up Ted Stevens' seat for the U.S. Senate and having a national platform. It's not going to do her any good because she's up against the Romney machine. Mitt Romney can write a $400 million check out of his personal checkbook. So we'll see. You know, am I crazy? Am I just a conspiracy nut? Well, for example, I was accused of being a conspiracy nut back in August when I said, you know, it's really strange that Karl Rove, when he's subpoenaed to testify before Congress, and this is a lawful subpoena, he should be in prison right now, and hopefully he will be in prison soon after January 20th. And we're going to get Don Siegelman back on the show to talk about that soon. But Karl Rove goes over to Yalta and meets with the president of Georgia, Mikhail Saakashvili. And 3 weeks later, and the guy who Saakashvili, and Saakashvili's not, you know, oh, yeah, he's running a democracy in Georgia. Well, sort of. He put his political opposition in jail. He imprisoned political protesters and demonstrators. He seized a television station, oddly enough, that was owned by Rupert Murdoch, and shut the thing down for running television, for running news stories that he thought were not favorable to him. And he paid almost $1 million to Randy Shuneman, who was only fired by the McCain campaign last week. Randy Shuneman, who was McCain's chief policy advisor. So Karl Rove goes over and he meets with Saakashvili, and 3 weeks later, Saakashvili starts dropping bombs on Svengali, the capital city of South Ossetia. And I said, this is an act of aggression by Georgia, and I think it was done. And when all was said and done, by the way, Saakashvili got $1 billion from the United States. We gave him $1 billion. And he went on television and he said, John McCain, help me out. He didn't say George Bush. He said, John McCain, help me out. I'm in trouble here, because Russia pushed back. And the whole world and the American press were saying, this is Russian aggression. And I was saying, no, this is Georgian aggression. And in fact, me and Vladimir Putin were the only two saying it. Vladimir Putin was saying, this is being done to manipulate the U.S. elections. Well, today's New York Times, dateline to Tbilisi, Georgia, newly available accounts by independent military observers of the beginning of the war between Georgia and Russia this summer call into question the longstanding Georgian assertion that it was acting defensively against separatist and Russian aggression. Instead, the accounts suggest that Georgia's inexperienced military attacked the isolated separatist town of Svengali on August 7th with indiscriminate artillery and rocket fire, exposing civilians, Russian peacekeepers, and unarmed monitors to harm. Bingo.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking looked on to something shocking. Now heaven knows, anything goes.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman.
Good authors too, who once knew.
20 minutes past the hour. Just very, very quickly, the Dow is up 158 points. Why? Well, because a couple hundred thousand people lost their jobs. You get it, 248,000 people in September, 240,000 in October. It's good for business. The more people who lose their jobs, the cheaper labor becomes. It's good for business. The Dow goes up. We've got to stop thinking that the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the measurements that are used by wealthy investors, are measurements of a healthy economy. They're not. They are not. And nobody's talking about the real measurements of a healthy economy, which is how strong is the working class? How many people have slipped into poverty? Do people have access to health care in the United States? Is it easy to find a good job? Anyway, 866-303-2270, your telephone number. And by the way, for the day, let's try and get as many calls in as we can over the next couple of hours. And we're always just totally slammed. I know many of you call and just get a busy signal. And so no need to tell me how you love the show or anything like that. And please know I've got three topics and two questions and a comment, and I want to read a poem when we're, you know, one thing, put it out there, drop it out there. If you want to talk about something else, call back. Fela in Ohio. Hey, Fela, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. You and I are MSU alumnus.
Well, I never graduated, so I'm not an
You didn't graduate from there. Yeah, well, I worked on the joint issue way back in the late 60s, early 70s. One comment, I think the antagonism of the Christian fundamentalist right would have a difficult time reconciling their dogma with the Church of the Latter-day Saints and or Jehovah's Witness. Aside.
Yeah, I think there's a big split between those two, but the LDS Church, the Mormon Church, is...
Oh, they got money, honey.
Or the Mormon political movement, I think, is really trying to forge an alliance with the Protestant Christian right, much like the Catholic Christian right has, and that's... I think that's going to drive the Romney thing.
I'm a formidable force, I agree.
Yep.
Second comment here, day before the election, the KKK... showed up in Marion. My neighbor, a 50-year-old black woman, came home and found flyers stuck in her door. So we have a block watch going to try to get some information on who these people are.
Yeah.
It's still crazy out here.
Yep, it is. It's a terrible thing. Fela, thank you very much for calling and for sharing that information with us. So Lucinda in Oak Park, Michigan. Hey, Lucinda.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you, Tom, I looked up the people that are on the 17-board advisory committee for Obama on economics, and Robert Reich and David Bonnier are on there. And I know that David Bonnier is against... led the fight against NAFTA, and I know those guys will be speaking for working people.
Yep.
And I'm glad that I think it shows that Obama meant when he said he was going to listen to a lot of different people.
Yep. And what we're going to have to, learn ultimately is what he decides once he's listened to them.
Exactly.
Excellent point, Lucinda. Thank you very much.
It did my heart good to hear that he had a broader base than just Rubin and Summer.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not doing what Bush did, which is only get on people who he knows in advance are going to agree with a previously held position. Mike in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, I just want to say briefly that this week's election marks the culmination of four centuries of history, and that the American Civil War has finally ended now that we have carried the old South, because the American Civil War actually was planted on the soil by the factions of the English Civil War, and the 2001 coronation of George II marked their zenith in the new world of the feudalist Confederates/GOP, from which they
going back to the mid-1600s with the first and second Bill of Rights and the revolt against, was it King Charles with the four knights who didn't want to, who were taxed, and
Charles the First lost his head in the first English Civil War, he represented the height of the absolute divine right of kings.
Right, and what came about as a consequence of that was the first English Bill of Rights, where the Magna Carta was expanded to the knights, actually, beyond just the royalty.
Yeah, the Bill of Rights was a bit later. There was some more development. But basically, this is the start of possibly a whole new order in the world.
I absolutely agree with you. Mike, very well said. Thank you very much. Sean in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Sean.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just some concerned that now that the, and happy, although that the Democrats have taken power, will they exercise some humility and find a way to include the Republicans rather than push just a single Democratic agenda?
I think, Sean, they will, to the extent that the Republicans do the same. I thought it was really tragic yesterday that John Boehner said, I don't have the exact quote in front of me. Well, wait a minute. Maybe I do. Here it is. He said, speaking of Rahm Emanuel as chief of staff, he said, this is an ironic choice for a president-elect who has promised to change Washington, make politics more civil and govern from the center. Barack Obama starts out by hiring as the guy who's going to work hand in glove with him in the White House, a man who is very famous for taking names and kicking ass. And that is exactly what you need if you're going to govern, particularly if you're going to govern against a very, or even with, a very toxic Republican Party. Because the old Eisenhower Republicans, the old Rockefeller Republicans, even the old Nixon Republicans are by and large gone. And they've been replaced by crazies. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Broadcasting for a change in America. 33 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This, as we say, from the wire services. Sarah Palin of Alaska has reached out to President-elect Obama's transition team to indicate her interest in being named ambassador to the nation of Africa, the governor confirmed today. Governor Palin said although she had planned to continue in a position in Anchorage, she is willing to leave the governorship, quote, because Africa is such a darned important country, end quote. I have always been very, very interested, she said, in the nation of Africa, partly because of it being located where it is. If you're standing in Africa and you look real close, you can see South Africa. She added that she had received phone calls encouraging her to vie for the post, including one from French President Nicolas Sarkozy. In other news in the Palin family, Bristol Palin's fiancé, Levi Johnson, said he was totally stoked about Tuesday night's election returns, calling the results definitely a game changer for me. The election of Barack Obama, he said, means different things to different people. To me, it means freedom, dude. Yeah, well, thanks to Andy Borowitz, tongue-in-cheek, borowitzreport.com for our news. Greg in El Cerrito, California. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, salutations. I would like to, I think Bernie needs to hear from all the people that feel Bush needs to be investigated, you know, because when is a crime not a crime? You know, when you turn a blind eye to it, I mean.
I agree with you. I mean, there are, Bernie and I very rarely disagree. On economics, we're you know, all most you know, foreign policy, but he was opposed to the impeachment of George W. Bush. I was in favor of it, and it sounded today like. Well, I don't want to characterize what he said because I'd want to go back and listen more carefully.
Right, but it'd be a crime not to prosecute, in my opinion.
I think so, and that's why I said to Bernie after that call, I said, you know, I think Bill Clinton really dropped the ball by not prosecuting the Iran-Contra guys, and I'd hate to see that precedent be reestablished, and you know, Bernie didn't take that bait. We'll see. I mean, you know, we'll see. But though that is one of those areas, Greg, and I'm absolutely with you on this, that is one of those areas where I believe we all have to let our members of Congress know that we want people held accountable in this administration. And frankly, if you want to do it the most effective way possible, you don't start at the top of George Bush. You start at the bottom. You start with the people you start with you, John Yoo, now he's a professor at Berkeley, you know, the people who are writing the memos, the torture memos, the people who are planning the war with the people in PNAC. You start with Karl Rove. You enforce the subpoena against Karl Rove. and you have and you start with Harriet Myers, and you enforce that subpoena. You get these people before Congress, and when they start looking at facing 5, 10, 15, 20 years in prison, eventually one of them is going to say, you know, George Bush made me do it. And then it's going to be obvious to the entire world. We need to deal with this like a RICO investigation, like an organized crime and racketeering investigation. You start at the bottom and you work your way up. You don't start at the top. And so the pressure, frankly, in my opinion, that we need to be putting on our elected members of Congress is to enforce the subpoenas against Karl Rove. We want to know, it wasn't Sarah Taylor, it was the other young woman from the Justice Department who was testifying in front of Congress, who said that Tim Griffin, as I recall his name, perhaps Tim Griffith, the number two guy under Karl Rove, that his job was to supervise caging operations. And the Democratic member of Congress said, oh, caging, what's that? I mean, this is the stuff that we need to be pushing into the voicemail of our members of the House and Senate. We need to stop caging in the United States. We need to stop the Republican disenfranchisement of people voting. We have across every state in this country, you know, in Alaska right now, there's some 70,000 votes that haven't been counted. We don't know yet how many of those were not counted because they were caged. They were people who were thrown off the voting rolls. And so when they showed up, they were told, sorry, you're not on the roll. You're going to have to cast a provisional ballot. And thus a ballot that hasn't been counted yet and won't be counted if they can't find that that person's actually on the rolls. And if the Republicans were successful in pulling them off the rolls, those provisional ballots will not be counted. And that's, frankly, in my opinion, why the exit poll or the before polls and the exit polls show Don Young and Ted Stevens losing in Alaska by a wide margin, and yet the actual count is showing them winning by a small margin. And in my opinion, the reason why is because so many Democrats were stripped off the voting rolls in Alaska. And we're seeing this all over the country. We cannot allow this to continue. This is a crime, frankly, in my opinion. David in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, David, listening on Talk 1090. What's up?
Hey, I wanted to talk about the new jobs that Obama was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The ones in the new technology that we're going to be getting into, the change of the direction in our energy and all that. In the paper about a week or so ago, it talked about college tuitions going up to the biggest jump they've ever been in. And I was saying to myself, they're already out of reach for so many people. And they were also talking about eliminating student loans, which for some people might be doing them a favor. Hello?
Yeah, I don't, you know, eliminating student loans is a tough one. I mean, but broadly speaking, we shouldn't have to have student loans. Every other industrialized, you know, fully developed country in the world views paying for college, for people who are qualified to go to college, who are intellectually qualified to go to college, paying for college as an investment in the future, because people who have college educations, number one, make the country stronger in terms of their ability to build technology and innovation, and number two, pay more taxes over the course of their lives. They pay back the cost of that college education over and over and over again. And frankly, I think that the reason why we have, you know, why Reagan stopped free college education in California back in the 60s or 70s, and the reason why, or whenever it was he was governor, I think it was the early 70s, that he stopped that, and why, by and large, it's been wiped out all across the United States. The ease with which people used to be able to get into college or used to be able to work their way through college with a minimum wage job. The reason why that has been wiped out is because you've got this conservative mindset that the country should be ruled by an elite few who come from inherited money, even if it's not massive inherited money.
If they raise the rates up even higher, I mean, they're already out of the range of so many people. If they raise them up even higher, well, when I said it might be doing some people a favor, I'm talking about people that get $100,000 in debt and then can't find a job and can't pay that.
Right.
But I was saying about those new jobs, I think there should be like paid on the train job, you know, so people don't have to get themselves $100,000 in debt to go and get these jobs.
Yeah, no, I think that what we need to do, David, well said, we need to have free public college education all the way up to PhD. In the United States, it will pay back for itself. It's going to cost us money for the first 6, 8, 10 years. After that, it's going to produce so much wealth for this country. So much wealth. I mean, it'll just be incredible. Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Bernice.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling in regard to listener financial support for your program. Is it possible for you to set up a special listener-sponsor fund to which we can periodically send checks?
Oh, that's sweet. The thing to do, Bernice, because this is a for-profit show and a for-profit, you know, radio stations and world. We're not NPR. So the thing to do is to call your local radio station and let them know that you're listening. And in fact, sometimes even talking to the people in the sales department at the local radio station and saying, you know, is there any way that I can help you? You know, maybe I know some potential advertisers or whatever, or if you've got some potential advertisers, I'll give them a shout and tell them I'd buy their product if they advertise with you. Number one. Number two, when you hear ads that, for example, there were Yes on Prop 8 ads on some of our California affiliates just because the people were going in and buying every ad on every station in an entire cluster, you know, that was owned by mostly like Clear Channel, but these companies. But when you hear an ad that you like or a company that you can support, you know, call them up and say, hey, I heard your ad on, in Dearborn, it would be DTW, and say, you know, and I really appreciate your supporting the radio station. And even if I don't need to buy a car this year from you, if it's a car dealer, for example, I'm going to encourage my friends to. You'd be amazed how important those calls are, because typically an advertiser will hear from listeners to a radio station once or twice a year. And one of the things that I hear all around the country is that listeners is talking with advertisers, because when I do affiliate visits, we do meet and greets with the advertisers, and they're just blown away by the fact that they might get 6 or 8 or 10 calls a month from listeners saying, or customers walking in the door saying, I'm here because I heard because I heard your ad on WDTW, for example, in Detroit.
I'll be sure to do all that. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernice. I truly appreciate it, because that's how you support this kind of programming. Mike in Santa Barbara, California. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Tom. Hey, I just wanted to, obviously we're all celebrating, you know, the election of Barack and the first, black president, and I think that's great. But, from my perspective, he wasn't really progressive enough for me. I would have preferred, like a Dennis Kucinich. But I did vote for Barack because I wanted him to have, an overwhelming majority.
Mm-hmm.
And a mandate. But at this point, after all the celebration dies down, we need to remember that those of us on the left need to, he's going to be getting a lot of pressure from the people on the right and a lot of very well-heeled and influential people on the right with a lot of money and a lot of lobbyists.
Yep.
And,
he's got people like Tom Brokaw out there saying, well, America's a center-right nation.
Right. How can we, as individual citizens, keep the pressure on Obama to push a more progressive agenda?
I think, Mike, we have to join up with all of the progressive organizations where there can be an institutional voice. The AFL-CIO has one, Working America. I think it's workingamerica.org, moveon.org, and others.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
So here's just to finish the answer to the last question, and it's really, I think, part and parcel of also how can we support a progressive agenda. A couple of the organizations, I'm on the advisory board of Progressive Democrats of America. That's pdamerica.org. It's a great organization. Drinkingliberally.org has chapters all over the United States. Great opportunity to physically meet up with people, get to know other people. Drinkingliberally.org. I think they also have a livingliberally.org, as I recall. MoveOn.org, of course. DemocracyForAmerica.com. It's the only .com here. That's the one that Jim Dean, Howard Dean's brother, runs. And they actually do trainings all over the country on how to be a progressive activist. And they're great. And they're very inexpensive. It's like $15 or $20 for for a weekend, and I think they even throw in lunch. I mean, it's basically they're just covering costs, and there's very good training. And ProgressiveMajority.org, Ben Cohen's organization, which I've worked with in the past, ProgressiveMajority.org. Those are some organizations where you can go right now and say, I'd like to join. I'd like to sign up. I'd like to be part of what you're doing. And, you know, if there's regular meetings, if there's conference calls, things like that, WorkingAmerica.org as well. And then finally, there are some great progressive websites out there. BuzzFlash.com is supported by the sale of books. If you're going to buy a book, go over to BuzzFlash.com first and make sure that if they have it there, buy it from them. The profit margin on those books is what keeps that website alive. CommonDreams.org is a great website where I've first published virtually all of my writings over the years, and they do a marvelous job. They run entirely on contributions. There's no advertising whatsoever. And so donate to CommonDreams.org. And then all the other websites out there, and there's many great websites out there that are supported by advertising, from Raw Story to Huffington Post to Op-Ed News. When you visit their sites, hit one of the advertising links, even if it's one that, particularly if it's one that you disagree with. It's funny, what I was doing for the last couple of weeks was whenever I saw on a progressive website an advertising link that went to a John McCain website or something like that, I would hit it because I knew that it would cost McCain a penny or two and that money would end up in the pockets of that progressive website. So, you know, that's how you can support them, is by supporting the advertisers, much like with radio. So I just wanted to summarize all that stuff. Back to the phone lines here. Jim in Fair Oaks, California. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for the information you gave on Proposition 8 earlier. I wasn't quite aware of Mitt Romney's participation, but we're going to continue to fight back for equality here in California.
Good.
The reason I called is, what do we know about Barack Obama's and Joe Biden's Senate seats? Do we know if they will be safely transferred to Democrats? Or
yes, they will be. They will be. I don't frankly recall. You know, every state has its own process. You know, whether there needs to be a special election, whether the governor just makes an appointment or whatever. And I don't remember the details of Illinois and Delaware. I know that O'Biden and Obama's seats are going to be safe Democratic. Here's the interesting footnote to all that, Jim. The reason, in my opinion, and again, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I don't think so. The reason why Harry Reid went nice, or at least soft, with Joe Lieberman yesterday is that if Norm Coleman loses the race and Al Franken pulls this race out of the bag in Minnesota, if down in Georgia we see Saxby Chambliss go away, and was Jim Martin, I think, is the guy who's running against him, and he wins. If in Alaska we see the former mayor of Anchorage, whose name is escaping me at the moment, beating the Senator Stevens, if we see those seats picked up, then the Democrats will not need Joe Lieberman. They'll have 60 seats. If, on the other hand, any one of those three goes to the Republican, then the Democrats are still going to need Joe Lieberman to be able to break a filibuster. And so, frankly, I think that right now, and Lieberman knows this, and Lieberman knows that he has some power here. And much like he had when he was the 50th vote or the 51st vote in some cases, now he could be the 60 or the 61st vote. And on the other hand, if they don't get all three of those, then maybe they don't need him as much, or maybe they need him more. I don't know. It depends on how aggressive Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe and George Voinovich are going to be in going along with the Republican majority in filibustering legislation and judicial appointments. But that's where I think it's at. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate your participation. Ed in Hillsboro, Oregon. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you once again. I just kind of following up on your comments to Mike and kind of underscoring them a little bit. We've pried open the door with this election of Obama. But to complete the metaphor, we have to now walk through it. We have to step out of the rain and inside. And the way we do that is by keeping our grassroots efforts active and getting out in the streets before the inauguration, I think, would be one important thing that we could do to press our agenda. And even after the inauguration, we need to keep the heat on, because it doesn't work just to have a president lead us. We have to lead the president.
Yep. And that's, again, why going to pdamerica.org and signing up, by going to drinkingliberally.org and signing up, by going to moveon.org and signing up, by going to democracyforamerica.com, progressivemajority.org, workingamerica.org, and I'm probably forgetting a half a dozen other great organizations, why becoming part of the process right now is so important. It is just so very, very important not to let this moment slip by. And to support the progressive websites that are carrying this message, and support the progressive politicians who are carrying this message as well, because this is an absolutely pivotal time, Ed. This is an absolutely pivotal time in America's history, and this is the pivotal moment in the Obama presidency. This is the moment that's going to decide which direction Barack Obama goes, which direction this country goes. I mean, there's just so much at stake here, so very much at stake here. So. Let's see, Philip in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Philip. Oh, Philip, I'm sorry, I missed the time cue there. Let me put you on hold. We'll pick you up on the other side of the break. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, tomhartman.com for our live chat room, our free live chat room, and our message boards, airamerica.com for our free video. There's an easy and quick link to that also from tomhartman.com, a little easier to find. 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back after the news.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, very interesting. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. At the beginning of the second hour, I shared my observations / belief, whatever, I don't know what the proper word is, guess, that the attacks against Sarah Palin are coming out of the Mitt Romney wing of the Republican Party, and that the massive funding of Proposition 8 in California, arguably the second most expensive election in the United States, more than 70%, according to Andrew Sullivan's blog, coming from Mormons, was all about making Mitt Romney president in 2012. And I am getting an avalanche of emails from Mormons saying things like, well, I'll just share a couple lines with you without identifying people on the air. This one comes from a fellow who's actually an attorney. He says, as an active yet a progressive Mormon, I think you might be onto something. I could tell you stories about how much intimidation and pressure was put on members vis-a-vis Prop 8 that would make your hair stand on end. Because I have spoken out against Prop 8, my family and I have been threatened, cajoled, manipulated, etc., with to do with my opposition. Progressive Mormons, yes, there are some, have been threatened with excommunication, told support for Prop 8 is a test of your faith, and ostracized like nothing I've ever seen in my 50 years of lifelong membership in this church. That's interesting. He says, P.S., while I was in Cleveland doing poll monitoring for Obama, others here in California were telling members of the church that if Obama wins, you better get your affairs in order, the implication being that the end of the world is coming, or as Mormons call it, the millennium. Another writer, Mel, says, I've met Mitt Romney and worked with him. I was raised a Mormon. Don't worry. I got the medication before I hit my 30s, so I'm okay now. But he was the stake president when I was serving a Mormon mission in Boston. Mitt is a nice guy on the face, but you're correct. He's very ambitious. And the Mormon priesthood machine had him pegged as a rising star back then, and that was in the 90s, early 90s. Then came the Olympics. And then he goes through this, you know, he's basically agreeing with me, saying, I guarantee he'll be the nominee in 2012. And then he says, I thought this was particularly interesting. He says, if you want some interesting historical study, do a little digging on the deep history of racism in the LDS Church. I'm familiar with that. As well as their changing of documents and republishing books to hide what has been considered out there doctrine to appear more mainstream. Mormons are avowed believers in a theocracy because they believe much in the same way that the fundamentalists believe, that they have to start Armageddon to get Jesus to come back. Mormons believe that the U.S. is the promised land and that there will be a Mormon in the presidency prior to the return of Jesus. Eddie in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Eddie, what's up?
I heard this last night about how Alaska chooses a senator when there's a vacancy. like they're fixing to have.
Right.
Sarah is governor, so she can't run. So what she's going to do is quit. Her lieutenant governor becomes governor, and he's going to appoint her in the Senate seat.
Right, and then she runs in a special election, or she fills out the Senate seat, one or the other, I forget which. Yeah, that's what I proposed yesterday on the show. I think that that's a highly likely scenario.
I heard the show
scenario.
Yesterday. I didn't hear that.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty likely scenario. You know, time will tell. But if Harry Reid refuses to seat Senator Stevens, assuming that he's still Senator Stevens, that's a very real possibility, Eddie. And, you know, time will tell. We'll see. But I'm telling you, no matter what, Mitt Romney is going to take down Sarah Palin because she's the only thing that's standing between him and 2012 for the Republican Party. And that's why, in my opinion, all these god-awful leaks are coming out of the Republican Party. Not that they're not true. I'm not at all surprised that Sarah Palin doesn't realize that Africa is a continent, not a nation. Frankly, tragically, that's probably the case with a not insignificant, a large minority of Americans. Maybe even a majority of Americans. I don't know. But certainly Africa is talked about as if it's monolithic, and it's not. I mean, there's probably more variety in everything from skin color to religion to culture to lifestyle to geography on the continent of Africa than in any other continent in the world. I mean, it's just you can't talk about Africa as if it was just one place. You just can't. But people do. Anyhow, Susan in Oakland Park, California. Hey, Susan.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to challenge the underlying assumption of the 60 votes needed to stop a filibuster for closure.
Okay.
If this arbitrary number was chosen and passed by the Senate from the Rules Committee, mm-hmm. why can't the Rules Committee simply propose a lower number? 55. It's arbitrary.
Yeah, they already have done that.
And then vote it and then put it up for a vote, which I assume would be just a simple majority vote.
Yeah, they have done that sometime in the 20th century, and I don't recall whether it was in the 19-teens, the 1930s, or the 1950s. It was one of those three. It used to be a two-thirds majority. It used to require what would today be 66 votes. In fact, it was when Roosevelt became president. He didn't have the two-thirds majority that he needed in his first term. And, tip of the hat to Paul, who sent me this from Denver. He said, in the election of 1932, the Democrats failed to achieve a majority as well, getting 59 out of 96, since there were 48 seats at the time. At that time, the cloture rule required two-thirds, which was 64 votes. The Democrats only got 59. That rule was changed to 60 votes in the Senate in 1975. And then he says, in the continuing realignment elections of 34 and 36, the majorities became overwhelming, 69 Democrats and then 76 Democrats. Then came the real business of progressive politics, such as Social Security. He says, I believe in 2010 we will get over 60. There will be 15 Democratic seats and 19 Republican seats up that year, so we can go for it then, including Specter of Pennsylvania, Voinovich of Ohio, Gregg of New Hampshire, Bond of Missouri, Vitter of Louisiana, Bunnington of Kentucky, and Martinez in Florida. Plus McCain's seat will be there for the taking. I agree with Paul. I don't think, Susan, yesterday or earlier in the week, I suggested that maybe we should just pull the nuclear option and blow up the 60-vote majority altogether. And I got a lot of pushback from that among both, you know, listeners and politicians. I think that there is something to be said for a supermajority, for a very deliberative body, the Senate being that. And, you know, let's see what we've got. Also, you know, Bernie's assertion on Wednesday that he doesn't think that Susan Collins, George Voinovich, and Olympia Snowe will go along with a lot of the filibuster attempts. And if they can hold on to Lieberman, and if they can pick up a couple of these other seats that are still in play, Alaska, Minnesota, and Georgia, then you know, it may be a non-issue.
I understand all that, but I'm still hoping that, you know, because 60 is just as arbitrary a number as any for a supermajority, make it 55.
Yeah, you could. I would say it's not actually arbitrary. You know, it's interesting. I've told the story here on this show before. It's in my book, What Would Jefferson Do?, about the Red Deer study that was done in the UK, where they wanted to find out if democracy actually happens in mammals. And they found that the alpha animal, while he had, and in the case of wolves, it would be she. I mean, it varies from species to species. But while the alpha animal had first choice of sexual mate, they did not exercise actual leadership over the herd, that the herd made decisions democratically, and that when it was time to go drink from one of the watering holes, when 50% of the deer were pointed toward one particular watering hole, the entire herd would move. And it turns out fish do the same thing with schools of fish. Flocks of birds do the same thing. There's not a leader. There's democracy. But when they put a predator near one of those watering holes, suddenly it took 66 out of 100 deer pointing toward a watering hole to move them. In other words, it's wired into our DNA that in times of danger, for things that are really serious, we need a supermajority. And I think that 60 votes is appropriate in that context. And this is why the founders put in, you know, the two-thirds majority in three-quarters of the states to amend the Constitution, which, by the way, the state of California should be looking at right now after the Prop 8 experience.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, but I think that there's something to be said for that, and I think that it rings true for us. I think that it rings true for humans because we share that democracy DNA with all the other animals out there. I mean, right on down to insects. When I interviewed one of the two scientists who did that research for my book, you know, he pointed out that when it was published in Science or Nature, I forget which one, that the response they got, you know, from bug guys, you know, entomologists and fish guys, ichthyologists and ornithologists, bird people, and just right across, even primatologists, right across the board was that everybody was seeing the same thing. You know, a swarm of gnats seems to, you know, they're just hanging out there in the air, and then all of a sudden they move. It's not because a leader says move, and it's not because they're telepathic. It's because more than 50% of them move their bodies in that direction a little bit, and suddenly they all move. It's, you know, democracy is genetic, and built into that genetic component is this supermajority when in time of crisis. And so, you know, I get your point, Susan, and in fact, as I said, I was even making a more radical suggestion a couple days ago. Let's just pull the nuclear option and blow up the supermajority. But I think that we can work with it. I hope.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Past the hour here in the No Boring Zone. Our voting alert.
Welcome to the future. Come try our voting machine.
Okay, as of about 9 p.m. last night, 316,476 votes had been counted in Virginia's 5th Congressional District. This is where Virgil Goody, remember the bigoted xenophobe and Republican, is being challenged by Tom Perriello. The spread is 158,000 for Perriello to 157,000 to Goody. The actual difference, you know, it's 158,562 to 157,914. Bottom line, a difference of 648 votes. So it looks like Goody is losing by 648 votes. So he's talking about a recount. Now here's where it gets really weird. According to Charlotte's NBC Channel 29, if they're going to do a recount, because this was all done on electronic touchscreen machines, what they do is they go back to the machine and they say, what was that number again? And the machine spits out the same number. There's no piece of paper. There's no audit trail. There's no way to count it. There's no way to divine the intention of the voter. And if the numbers are different, then you have to ask yourself, what happened to the machine? This is really strange. Another reason to get rid of these damn machines. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, Philip in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Philip.
Hey, Tom. Kudos.
Thank you.
And authoritarian personality disorder.
Yeah, John Dean was on here talking about it a couple days ago.
Yes, and I'm not sure that's not the Bush we're beating around.
Well, it's certainly the, you know, one of the problems of the Bush administration from top to bottom.
I have some, I very much wish that, you know, Rowdy used to have Dr. Frank or something. Here's my questions. How is this disorder spread? How is it contracted? What are the symptoms?
Mm-hmm.
How does it affect sexuality? And do drugs seriously aggravate it? And,
well, it seems to,
we need way more information on this.
Okay, it seems to repress sexuality. It, drugs, I don't know. There is some evidence that, that about 20% of the population of the United States anyway is vulnerable to this.
A big percentage.
Yeah, to being authoritarian followers and a very small percentage, maybe less than 1% authoritarian leaders. And, authoritarian personality disorder. There was a study that was published about 4 or 5 months ago, which we talked about on the show. In fact, I think I just did it as a crazy alert. I did it kind of lightly. But it indicated that the kids who grew up as the ones who were ostracized in school, the ones who were the outsiders looking in, tended to be the ones who ended up as the authoritarians. It was sort of like Revenge of the Nerds.
My question is this...
But not always.
Is this a psychiatric disorder that's threatening not only our community, our country, but the very world itself?
Philip, I think it is. I think it is, and I think
then
we need to do something about it.
We need to talk a great deal more about this, Tom. Yeah. I'm sympathetic, but I don't want to have Karl Rove or Bush use this as a defense.
Yeah.
I think that they should be, in treatment.
Well, it's not, I don't think it's in the DSM, I think we're up to the DSM-4 now, and I don't think it's in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association.
Why not?
But that's a good point. It probably should be. And Philip, you raise a good issue, and I promise you, we will do shows on this in the future. This is a topic that is really worth digging into at some length. John in Pembroke Pines, Florida. Hey, John, listening on WINS.
Hey, Tom, how are you? I've been a long-time listener of your show. I just wanted to say that I didn't support either McCain or Obama for this this whole charade of change which has been going on. I just wanted to give a statement and get your thoughts on it. I would have been more likely to have supported Obama if the change that we could believe in had been something along the lines of questioning and challenging something like the Federal Reserve Act or unapportioned income tax.
You know, first of all, the income tax is being challenged based on the assertion that Congress didn't have, that they were short one vote to pass that amendment, or one state actually hadn't ratified it, or whatever the thing is. But it's here. And if it wasn't here, we'd probably have to replace it anyway. It would be a good thing to put in. With regard to the Federal Reserve, I strongly believe, and I've said it many times on this program for many years, that the Federal Reserve should become federal. In other words, it should be bought. It's a private corporation, and it should be bought from its stockholders by the Treasury Department and be brought under the purview under the aegis of the Treasury Department. Our Constitution requires the Treasury Department to mint coins. And all coins in the United States are actual U.S. currency. All paper money in the United States is not actual U.S. currency. It's Federal Reserve notes.
It's all based on debt.
That's right. It's based on debt, and it's based on the Federal Reserve. You know, you have to, it used to be, Nixon did away with this in 71 or 72, you can convert our paper money into gold from Fort Knox. But even then, it was the Fed that controlled the gold, although the Treasury technically owned it. But now it's just, it's the Fed. I think the Fed... It should come under the Treasury Department. But I don't think you're going to hear Obama talking about that.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call
33 minutes past the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman here with you, and time now for our Berlusconi alert of the day. Now, what do you do when, well, here's the story. Small-time crook and entrepreneur Silvio Berlusconi buys a radio station, then buys a TV station, then buys a newspaper, then buys another radio station, then buys another TV station, then buys another newspaper, then a couple more radio stations, then buys a radio network, then buys a TV network, then buys the other radio network, and then the other TV network, and ends up owning all the radio networks and all the TV networks other than the state-run ones, and most of the newspapers in Italy. What does he do then? He runs for prime minister, and guess what? Three times he wins. So what does Silvio Berlusconi have to say about Barack Obama? He says, and he was talking to Dmitry Medvedev, the president of Russia. He says, I told the president that Obama has everything needed in order to reach deals with him. He's young, he's handsome, and he's even tanned. Yes. Berlusconi later defended the remark to reporters, saying it was a great compliment. I'm willing to take him at his word that he meant to be nice, even though he has compared a German lawmaker to a Nazi guard camp and suggested that the new Spanish government had too many women in it. But in any case, Silvio at it again. Italy's only black lawmaker, by the way, Jean-Leonard Sudali, called the comment embarrassing. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Claudio in Coral Springs, Florida, listening on Winds. Hey, Claudio.
Yes, hi, Tom. I appreciate you answering me. I have a question for you. Just wanted you to tell me how you feel about it. My wife and I discussed this with the Proposition 8 and Proposition 2 down here in Florida, they're not talking about the people who were able to take in children, these foster children, give them a home, give them a place to live, a safe environment, and they're turning it upside down. We feel bad. We've been married for 38 years. We've raised two children of our own, and we're just wondering what your take is on this, that nobody's talking about the children themselves who are stuck in these foster homes. We'd love nothing more than be in a place to have somebody take care of them.
Yeah, we have a nationwide disaster and a nationwide disgrace, Claudio. All across this country, there are children who would like to be adopted, who are not, who are eligible for adoption, and there are not enough adoptive families. Number one, number two, there's a crisis in child care. We need more foster families, particularly good foster families, people who are not simply, bringing in five or six kids for the money, but actually are, one or two kids, providing quality environment and doing it because they. They want to help out children. There's a real crisis in America around this. And what we're seeing with these measures that ban gay marriage and then talk about children in the context of it, or even worse, the measures that ban single people or gays from adopting or being foster parents, is the ongoing demonization of gays. And as I said earlier, I think, frankly, this is, so much of this is being funded right now by Mormons. I think that this is part of the Romney 2012 campaign, and you're seeing the leading edge of it. This is the tip of the spear, and it's a crime, in my opinion, a moral crime against the United States. It is this is, and we will. I predict 15, 20 years from now, we will look back at this era and shake our heads sadly, the same way we looked back at the 1950s and 1960s in the United States, as state after state was trying to defend their laws against interracial marriage. I mean, this is the next civil rights frontier, and we have to wake up, particularly our African-American and Latino brothers and sisters who voted in large numbers in favor of Proposition 8, to the fact that this is a civil rights issue. And gays are facing the same kind of discrimination based on the way they were born that African-Americans and Latinos have faced in this country for so long. And this has nothing to do with polygamy, which is a choice. Being born gay is not a choice. And this has nothing to do with being a sexual criminal or pervert or pedophile or anything like that. Those are diseases. That has nothing to do with being gay. Those are mental illnesses we're talking about, or crimes. And this has to do with how people are born. This is a civil rights issue, a fundamental human rights issue, and it needs to be addressed as such. Thanks a lot for the call. Stan in Shell Beach, California, listening on KYNS. Hey, Stan.
Hey, how you doing? I went online and I pulled up a video on YouTube, and it's called Georgia Started the War, and it's /Pat Buchanan. And it's an interview on Russia Today in which Pat Buchanan says that the McCain people got Georgia to start the war with Russia.
Yeah, I know. That's not the only place Pat Buchanan said that. He and I were the only two people that I know of in America, you know, in the media who were saying this.
Yeah.
And, you know, every now and then Pat Buchanan says something that's true. It was really spooky. 3-4 years ago, 5 years ago it must have been. I was living in Vermont at the time. And he published a book, I think it's called Where the Right Went Wrong, that with the exception of the very last chapter, which was a kiss-up, suck-up to the Republican Party to try and keep him from being thrown out, could have been used for a criminal indictment of George Bush. You know, it was all about the crime of the Iraq War and what a disaster it was. And in fact, Mark Carlin and I went to Mark, he runs BuzzFlash.com, and I do a book of the month, you know, for them. And I said, Mark, I think maybe we should do this as a book, but it's Pat Buchanan. You know, we ultimately decided not to. Every now and then, Pat is right about something, and he was right on this one too. You're right.
In this interview, he calls for Congress to investigate what happened there.
Yes, and I think that there should be a congressional investigation. And if there isn't, it'll be because the Republicans will obstruct it, and they will obstruct it because this is going to lead right back to John McCain, Randy Shuneman, and a bunch of neocons in the Republican Party. This, in my opinion, Saakashvili was talked into invading South Ossetia by Karl Rove, who met with him 3 weeks before the invasion in Yalta, and by Randy Shuneman, who he paid almost a million dollars to for consulting. And when it didn't go quite the way he wanted, he freaked out. He went on television, international television, and said, John McCain, help me. This is the president of Georgia. He's not saying George Bush helped me. He's saying John McCain helped me. Why? Because it was McCain's chief foreign policy advisor, Randy Shuneman, who was his lobbyist in the United States. And what did we do ultimately? At the urging of McCain and others within the neocon branch of the Republican Party, the Democrats rolled over on this and wrote a check for $1 billion to Saakashvili. Said, here, rebuild your country. And it didn't work, by the way. Over the short term, it gave a nice little bounce to the McCain campaign. John McCain got to change the topic away from Iraq and seemed like he was a real, you know, military guy. He would win on national security. We can't talk about the economy. That's why they did it. That's why they got Saakashvili to do it, and they paid him handsomely for it. But the reality is that hundreds, if not thousands, of people died. Innocent people died so that a political campaign in the United States could get a little more traction. That, to me, is a revolting crime. Kim in San Francisco. Hey, Kim.
Hey, I'll try to be as succinct as I can.
Thank you.
Al Franken used to say a great story about FDR. There was somebody in the Oval Office with FDR who was working for civil rights in the South. Mm-hmm. And he was explaining to FDR, let me tell you what's wrong with the law. This is wrong. That's wrong. What's actually happening on the ground in the South is this, and this is wrong, and that's wrong, and this is wrong. And Roosevelt put a finger up to his mouth and said, and the guy said, you've got to change these things. These things have to be changed. And FDR said, make me.
Right.
So what's happening is, in my opinion, although we've won, Barack hasn't won until all of us mature as political people and stay political and not be spectators. And yep. And Barack will have won when all of us stay organized and inform and speak up together when Barack does something that we don't approve of or has a measure. Not all of us approved of everything Barack wanted. But we have a duty and an obligation to make this a successful presidency by remaining engaged and telling him what we like and telling him what we don't like. He wants us to protest about certain things. He wants to hear from us. We may not get what we want, but I believe that this man is willing to listen, which
yes.
is the most important thing. And the other thing is, I have a question for you. Why is the afterglow of this election so short? When Clinton won, the afterglow went on and on. And this one is short, and I think it's because Barack is all business, and I think it might be a good thing.
Yeah, and I think that it's also because both within the political world and without, in other words, among the American populace and internationally, we all get it how high the stakes are right now.
Okay.
We're talking about a nuclear-armed Pakistan perhaps devolving into chaos.
Mm-hmm.
If Kashmir, for example, were to go, the disputed area in the mm-hmm. Himalayas between Pakistan and India, that in my mind, frankly, is a much larger flashpoint than the border with Afghanistan.
And has been for years.
Absolutely. If that were to go and we were to see a nuclear war between Pakistan and India, it would be unimaginable. The bulwark against Iranian expansionism historically was Iraq. And we took out Saddam Hussein, who was the guy stopping the Shias. And now we've got what's going to be ultimately a Shia-controlled country. I mean, we've got some real serious problems. Kim, thanks for the call. Some real serious problems that are not easily solved, that are not resolved with sound bites, and are not even amenable to soundbite solutions. And thank God we finally have a president who's got an IQ above room temperature.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at hartmanradio.com.
Hey, thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to Chris Rosen, Lauren Kirshner, Marcus Hillman, Stephanie Whiteman at Air America, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. It is much appreciated. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Crystal in Beaverton. Hey, Crystal, what's up?
Well, I have a distraught relative who is convinced that Barack Obama is a radical Marxist out to destroy the Constitution, and if the Fairness Doctrine is restored, it will wipe out right-wing talk radio. And ideas like that, and I need help calming her down.
Yeah,
I want to know how widespread this is and where does she get the ideas from.
Well, somebody sent me an email to grassfire.org, which is a right-wing website, a sneak peek inside Living in an Obama Nation. This is a booklet that they're sending out, Threats to Your Freedoms, 21 Obama Nations. The moment has arrived. The movement has begun. The former community organizer, whom Colin Powell called a transformational figure and Oprah Winfrey hailed as the one, it's a racist right-wing screed. And there are a bunch of them out there. There's another one that was Biden09.com. And yesterday, the bumper sticker that they were selling on that site in the zero of the 09 had a crosshairs in it. Now they've taken off the crosshairs. So it's a little less of an explicit threat. But, the implicit, and they've put up some language about impeachment. But, you know, early on, it looked like it was calling, in my opinion, for the assassination of Barack Obama. There's no shortage of crazies out there.
But she doesn't have computer internet access at the moment, so it can't be that.
Well, I guarantee you she knows somebody who does, who is passing along. Yeah, or she's listening to right-wing talk radio. I mean, there's a fair amount of hate radio out there.
But is there anything I can say to counter, especially the Marxist part? I mean, she's convinced – well, he also is responsible for the economic downturn because he encouraged bad credit loans in Chicago or something. I mean, but I read your book about talking to people, and unfortunately, it didn't help.
Yeah,
sorry.
Cracking the code. Actually, I think you'll find for this argument, you'll probably find in my book, "Screwed: The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It," more cogent arguments about why the right-wing economic philosophies and governing philosophies don't work in the United States. All I can suggest is that you go over to BarackObama.com. They had that Fight the Smears site attached to it, the lies of the other side. He's our president, or he will be in 73 and a half days. And let's give him a chance. I mean, that's what I would say to a right winger who is hysterical is chill out. It's not going to be that bad. So I know beyond that, I don't know. And apparently, somehow a button is being pushed in New York. And Pat in Oakland Park, Florida, just got locked on the board. Hey, Pat, what's up?
Hi. I listened, unfortunately, to a lot of what McCain said while he was running.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing that was so interesting was, I know how to end the war in Iraq. And when I get elected, I'll do it. Remember that?
I do. And I remember going on the air and saying, okay, if you know how to end the war in Iraq, please tell us.
Well, I wonder if he's going to tell us now that he's not going to be in the White House.
Yeah.
Or he's just going to go to the grave with the secret.
I think frankly, his statement was more rhetorical than literal. It was like, I know how to fight. I know how to be a military guy. That guy, you know, Obama has not been in the military. He doesn't know how to be a military. I think that was the essence, essentially, of what he was saying, Pat.
That would be nice. He just sounded like he thought he knew the trick.
Yeah, I know.
One other real brief question. All those sites you gave before about how you can get involved, are they on your website?
I'll post them there.
Yeah,
when I get off the air.
And especially that little dialogue to call your radio station you had with that woman. That would be, put a little box. This is what you can say to your radio station.
Okay, well, I'll have to see if I can dig that out. Thank you very much, Pat. I appreciate the call, and it's nice to hear from you. Sean in Wisconsin, for some reason that line 8 keeps popping. Somebody keeps popping that on. Sean in Wisconsin, you're on the air. Hey, Sean.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
I just wanted to kind of elaborate on the...
I'm sorry, Sean. Somebody in New York just popped line 8 on. Are you still there? Sean? Stephanie, somehow the board is getting all screwed up. There we go. Sean?
Okay. I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on a previous caller who was talking about religion and kind of religious tolerance, essentially. It was a comment that I heard... that I've heard a number of times, but the first time I ever heard it was on an old All in the Family episode. You remember the one, the Swingers episode?
I don't, but...
Okay,
you can
quickly
tell me about it.
What the hell is this?
We just lost him, and somehow the line 8 got popped up live again. So, apparently our board is all screwed up. I'm going to just wrap this up by I want to go through this list one more time in the last 20 or 30 seconds. We've got Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org. These are groups that you should consider joining and participating with. Drinkingliberally.org. They're doing community stuff, you know, get-togethers all over the country. MoveOn.org, obviously they've been around forever. DemocracyForAmerica.com, Jim Dean's organization. ProgressiveMajority.org. ProgressiveMajority.org, Ben Cohen's organizer. I think he was one of the guys who started that. At BuzzFlash.com, a great source to buy books if you want to, you know, see what's going on, read about what's going on in America. Common Dreams, a great website worthy of your donation. And, of course, all the other websites that are advertiser-supported, click on their advertisers when you visit their websites. That's how they stay in business. And the same with Progressive Talk Radio. Let your radio station know you're listening. Let the advertisers know that you're listening. Coming up Monday, Carrie Lucas from the Independent Women's Forum on how President-elect Obama can best fix our economic crisis. That should be an entertaining conversation. Plus, hedge funds advisor Michael Stathis is going to tell us how to profit from the coming Great Depression. Whoa. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you Monday. Have a great one.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.